Episode 139 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded July 5th, 2017. Plane crashes and road trips. All right, guys, it's me, Les, and Mike in the studio for this episode, and we're going to be talking about Wrecked. We're going to be talking about American Gods.
So you guys are going to explain what Wrecked is to everybody.
Yes.
I don't think anybody's seen it, but you two.
Literally nobody seems to know about this show, which is actually really funny and has Reese Darby on it. I'm amazed it ran under the radar.
The whole cast is really impressive. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about this because I wouldn't have known about it had you not said anything.
No, it looks great. I haven't seen it, so I'm looking forward to it.
And because of our wide reach of audience, now everyone is going to watch it.
Yes.
So
you're welcome, TBS.
We're going to proselytize.
Sorry we didn't do this for Impastor.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good show.
So we are the TV Dudes. We already introduced ourselves. I did want to say that if you guys like listening to this show, you want to help support us, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you can make a per episode pledge. In exchange, we do bonus exclusive content. We also want to say that this month, we are promoting the podcast Gilmored. It stars Key and a guy named Mike. Mike?
Yeah, that's me.
That's you.
It's a Gilmore Girls podcast. You know, Les has been on that.
Yes, I have.
Oh, you also watch this?
Yes, I also watch the Gilmore Girls.
And we still allow you on the TV, dude?
Yes.
Oh, wipe that look off your face, Grant.
I think the one time that we covered Gilmore Girls here, it entirely fell to me like just cricket silence in the room.
Right.
I don't know what you're saying. You're saying something about coffee and you're talking really quickly. I don't know what's going on.
Everybody took their bathroom break at that point and just sat in the chair alone.
So are you guys doing like a full watch through then?
We are. Actually, we're just covering classic episodes or episodes that we really love from the first season. So right now we're doing the first season. We're getting pretty close to the second season. So it's me and Key from TV Pilot Watching. We covered the entire revival. That's what Les did with us. He did an episode or two of that. But really, we're just covering classic, like really fan favorite episodes of Gilmore Girls.
Nice. Okay. Well, you can check that out at permanentrcrd.com.
permanentrcrd.com/Gilmored. Gilmored.
Or you can just go to GilmoredPod, GilmoredPod.com.
GilmoredPod.com.
And Grant, there's a third way that you can support us.
Oh, what? No. What is it?
Well, yes, you could give money to Patreon, and sure, you could just listen to the show and tell your friends, but if you are an incredibly hairy person or you know someone with a lot of body hair, and I mean it has to be a lot of body hair, you can shave permanentrcrd.com or www.thetvdudes.com into your body, run around shirtless, screaming how great the podcast is. It will help.
If you streak at a sports game, we don't have a lot of crossover with sports watchers.
No, that would help us.
Yeah, that will gain us maybe a new audience. So yes. Go do that.
If you aren't hairy, you can do it in suntan lotion.
All I can think is Robin Williams died too young.
His true calling. He's such a hirsute male.
Yes.
All right, guys. We also have listener questions. If you like us on Facebook and on Twitter, you guys can ask us questions. We didn't get any questions on Twitter. That's okay, guys. We got a bunch on Facebook.
I put it on Instagram. Let me check.
What?
I did.
You put us on Instagram?
On the Permanent Record Instagram.
Oh, boy. Well, you can check that. But our first question comes to us from, fellow TV dude Ashley Moreno. She's asking us about American Gods. And I think, actually, this question should hold off until we discuss that. Okay. So let's put a little bookmark in this one. Next question comes to us from Jonathan Haftemichael, who says, hi, dudes. When Netflix licenses U.S. releases of anime and Asian live-action dramas, the shows always have a Netflix original title card, despite Netflix having no involvement in their productions. It seems a little disingenuous to me. Do you think that Netflix should differentiate between these types of series and the likes of House of Cards and Orange is the New Black? If so, what would you like to call the former?
There's an argument for it against this in my head. Hulu for years has done this. A lot of the streaming channels, before they really had the money to really put their toe in the water and make their own series, they were just going around and picking up web series or picking up series that got discarded by another network and they, you know, picked up the half season of it or whatever. And so it always felt disingenuous that if you look through Hulu originals, four or five of those shows aired other places and are Hulu originals now because it's the only place they live. And I feel like on Netflix, it is confusing that they drop like 40 things a week. Two of them are produced by Netflix. 38 of them are either, you know, British productions or European shows or Spanish shows, or then they've just ported them over, Korean shows, they just ported them over here. And that's great. I don't want them to differentiate those because I do think there's a sliver of the American audience that will enjoy them but would not watch them if they were billed as Netflix art house, Netflix foreign cinema, or something like that.
Or a Netflix production.
Yeah.
Rather than Netflix original.
That said, I do think it's a little disingenuous that they're all getting branded the same thing.
There's already a distinction. I mean, the ones that are true Netflix productions are marketed well, and the ones that aren't, aren't. So the ones you've heard of, those are real Netflix. The ones you haven't heard of, you're like, what is this, you know, a vaguely looking British show that actually might be Korean that's about science fiction that I've never heard of,
like,
that also stars somebody from a 90s sitcom. What is this?
Are you talking about The Travelers?
Yes.
Like Okja Okja. That is definitely different than the other 30-something Korean shows that Netflix has dropped in the last year because Netflix advertised the crap out of that.
Yeah.
And like you said, they crow about theirs.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, if they buy a property to put on their show, they've obviously watched it and put their written approval on it that they want this to be part of their brand. So original in that regard versus them. It seems like they have a kind of a standoff approach anyway and letting creative freedom for whoever's making their shows on their network. So whether or not it's original, like from the inception or when they buy it, I don't know.
I feel like everybody's understanding that these things mean Netflix curated.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, that's what it is.
Next question comes to us from Nick Thies, who says, TV revenge update.
Oh, yeah.
We've been missing some of these, actually. So he's back. He says, since our last encounter, I've gotten revenge upon my roommate for winning our TV pitch game, which, as an aside, I have to kind of bring you guys up to speed. Randy and I were on the UGO podcast. I believe you were on there at some point,
yes,
too, right?
Yeah, I got interviewed.
Yeah. Well, Randy and I were on to play a TV pitch game. So we would go and we played an actual game that we would pitch different TV shows for. Pretty fun. And so that gives a little bit of context for this. He says, I have infected my roommate with lycanthropy and gotten him hooked on cocaine wine, which is also an Inside TV dude's joke. So Lycan Dope, which is the name of the TV show that his roommate won the game basically with by pitching, was born. Now I need a nemesis for this cocaine-addicted werewolf to fight. What other monsters with a drug habit, presumably from TV, do the TV dudes suggest?
Wait, somebody with a drug habit has to fight the cocaine-injected werewolf?
Yeah.
I would think it would be like an anti-drug beast that would fight, like Nancy Reagan.
Nancy
Reagan, zombie Nancy Reagan.
Who is the... How Steve's wife, the religious nut from True Blood, the blonde lady that ends up being the vampire cure herself.
Oh, I love her. She's fantastic.
I feel like she would be the nemesis for this. Like a complete goody-goody, especially if she were a vampire that only drank True Blood and refused to actually feed. Like, I feel like that's the good nemesis for the cocaine-fueled werewolf would be like a vampire who refuses to drink blood.
You're right. It's got to be a vampire.
Like somebody who's already kicked, who's like, no, man, I can show you how. You know, it works if you work it.
Yeah.
Charlie Pace from Lost, he also loves cocaine. They can go at it. They can fight over cocaine. Or they can just become roommates who become cocaine dealers on the side. I think it could be delightful.
Sing that one song.
Zombie Nancy Reagan.
Zombie Nancy Reagan was the correct answer. You're very much right there. Dennis McElwain says, with the critical success of Fargo, The Exorcist, Hannibal, and other established properties that should not be adapted, what other established properties that should not be adapted could you see succeeding? Another attempt at RoboCop or Time Cop? Those are my suggestions. Does the entirety of Permanent Record endorse cocaine wine? I guess that's two questions.
Well, it is mostly cocaine. So,
yeah, we are okay with cocaine wine.
Yeah, it's good.
Cocaine.
Yeah.
I think what you said, like, Fargo shouldn't have worked. Like, the adaptation to Fargo should have been a horrible idea. The same with Exorcist. And those ended up being, I mean, Exorcist is not, I don't think, as great a show as from
is
what
it
I've heard.
Still on? It I guess still, it is getting a second season, right?
Yeah, I think it got another season.
But no Gina Davis.
But what I watched of the first season was a lot better than I expected Exorcist to be. So I kind of see what he means. Like, these things shouldn't have worked, and they, I don't know, we've got good enough people making television now that they are.
Yeah. Established property. Hey, what if Watchmen and Damon Lindelof got together,
ooh,
guys?
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I would say that. Not the Jetsons.
No, not so much the Jetsons.
Which I think is happening.
That is happening. Yeah. Yeah. Right. I'm thinking, I mean, I'm amazed that there's not a Fast and Furious TV show, but Fastlane kind of existed. Mm-hmm. Or Drive. But I'm really amazed that there's not been another swing at a Fast and Furious type car chase show.
Yeah, especially given the success.
Especially Baby Driver right now.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of other giant franchises that...
I mean, off the top of my head, I want to say like Ghostbusters, Scott Pilgrim, really nerdy stuff I like, but that just sounds problematic.
I don't
right?
want like a Jason or Freddy Krueger show. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I mean, they're about to do Castle Rock, which would really kind of... That would kind of be my top pick, except they're really doing that. They're just doing an anthology show that is set loosely in Stephen King's Maine.
I think it was called Stranger Things.
Yes.
I don't know why they're doing it again. Yeah. But we'll see.
I don't really have one that I really want done. I think the best ones are the ones that you don't expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just blindside you.
Mm-hmm. Ulysses Carmona says, "Hi, guys. I have a question for you. Last week, I finished Glow, and I absolutely loved it. It was great, but it got me thinking, which of these two scenarios could happen? One scenario has it that they make the second, third season, and so on, and carry the risk of alienating the audience that isn't a fan of wrestling, because they would have to really start leaning more toward the wrestling side of things instead of the luxury of focusing on character development. The other scenario is that essentially they only make a one season or maybe two season show and then just become one of the greatest miniseries of all time. Also, did you notice that both American Gods and Glow share the actress who finds out that her best friend is sleeping with a husband? Which I don't think that's right. Is that Betty Gilpin as the Shadow Moon's wife's friend? I didn't think that was her.
I'll have to look that up. That might be. I don't know if that's just other,
if it is, that's hilarious.
Maybe it's just other blonde lady, but I think it might be. Yeah, and they don't have that. That confrontation is not in the book. That was for the show.
Yeah.
Which I thought it worked really well.
Yeah, she was great. Yeah, so what do you guys think about this show? Do you think it's an issue?
I don't really accept the framing of the question. I don't think character development is a luxury that they had in season one because they weren't doing other stuff. If the women have to move into dealing with the actual day-to-day complexities of keeping up a wrestling career, it'll be the same as dealing with the day-to-day complexities of getting a wrestling career. I think the show writers will, I don't see it being a problem for the show writers. What yeah. The scenario I'm interested to see if they tackle is what really happened to Glow, which was an abrupt cancellation and ending of their money. Like, they just stopped in 1990 and they weren't unpopular. It just stopped. And so I'm interested to see if they're going to have something like that happen where the show ends and then they carry that plot change through.
Yeah, there's so many theories about what happened to Glow. Like, if you watch the documentary mm-hmm. that's on Netflix,
yeah.
I think there's a theory floated that Glow was just kind of a tax write-off for yeah. somebody. And once that was did its thing, yeah. they didn't need it anymore.
Because they didn't even do – I mean, it wasn't even like commercials. They straight infomercialed products, like
right.
the wrestlers themselves during the show would pitch products.
Yeah.
And so yeah, there's an argument that it's a rumor that it was just a tax write-off.
Yeah. But I co-sign what you said. I don't think – I mean, if they go deeper into the wrestling, they're not – the show's not going to drop the character development, like, at all.
Nah.
You know, that's what the show's about. The show, it's all about identity. You know, the main character, Allison Brie's character, is trying to find herself while she's trying to find her wrestling identity. That's baked into the show. Yeah. I mean, you're going to get more of that every season.
I can't believe how true some of the moments in this sitcom felt.
I'll be fascinated to see how the huge success of the first season of Glow influences the wrestling world, brings back Glow in real life, and then they have that as the finale for the TV show.
Yeah. My real question is, how is the actual episodes of Glow not on streaming or on the air right now?
Oh, yeah.
Like, why wouldn't they have picked it up? Like, why wouldn't Netflix have
How is Netflix? Cheap? Yes. How is somebody not just cheap ass running? It seems like you could probably snatch this up for nothing.
It's probably hard to find. Somebody probably just threw it in the garbage years ago.
I bet the tapes are probably legit difficult to find or something.
Yeah.
They're probably going off like one kid in Alabama who taped this off his TV.
Yes, yeah.
Jeez. And you could stream that shit.
Last question comes to us from Benjamin Hamill. Unless, were there some weird questions on Instagram?
Instagram, we got 14 likes, no questions.
Okay.
14 likes for the picture that says, ask us questions.
Nice, yeah.
I love your Instagram.
Thank you, Instagram.
Benjamin Hamill says, hey dudes, everybody who listens to the TV Dudes podcast knows that this podcast is a lot of fun and it's filled with laughter and joyous discussion.
Oh yeah.
How much of the TV Dudes success is due to cocaine wine? I can't tell. We won't tell.
Yeah, I'm taking that secret to my grave, but I'm never going to die.
I'll never tell.
But for this question, let's get serious for a second. Let's talk about Bill Cosby. Oh, boy.
Oh, no. Hand me that cocaine wine.
The Cosby Show is one of the most important sitcoms of all time. With Bill Cosby in the news lately for some serious, serious shit, how will this affect the legacy of The Cosby Show? Or should what's happening with Bill Cosby affect the legacy of The Cosby Show at all? I can't see it not affecting
it. It's friggin' ruined for me. If he were just an actor on that show, it'd be one thing, but Bill Cosby personally was responsible for so much about that show.
Yeah, that he is that show.
He is that show.
Including the guest stars that are on the show, which he raped.
Yes.
Jeez.
Like, even as he was fighting for some great things on that show.
Yeah.
It's inextricably linked, and now anything that he says on that show can be misconstrued. Plot lines can be read into in a fucked up way now. It really detracts from it.
You know, like it should. The Carmichael Show did a good episode about this. You guys watch that?
Yeah, I like the Carmichael.
Yeah. I think it was season, maybe the latest season, 3, maybe season 2 on Hulu, but watch that to get my feelings on it, which are complicated.
I mean, the other side of this is that the historical legacy of this show and how it influenced other shows, like, that is still a powerful show, and that can't be dismissed. This did have, like, what it did for black comedy and comedy in general. It really did elevate a lot of it. But
that he combed through the scripts and made sure that they were never showing black people in a derogatory manner. Like, I mean, he really, it's a horrible person. I mean, he did great things in his career, and the entire time he was a horrible person. Malcolm Jamal Warner, I think, wrote an op-ed after it reached whatever tipping point for him of like, ah, shit, this is true. Mm. That was heartbreaking of just like, I can't deny what he did for me as a person and in my career, but I know that I had that experience with him because I'm a guy.
Yeah.
And I was not a woman on set. And it's just heartbreaking. I can't watch Cosby, whether it's fair or not. I will never be able to watch. He's ruined so much shit. It's weird that systemically raping people for his entire life has ruined his reputation with me.
You know what I haven't noticed, like, take a hit from this, though? Jell-O. Like,
You're right.
I don't see, like, I don't know how Jell-O's like in a, like,
no, but it really didn't
him.
It didn't intrinsically like wreck Jell-O. Like,
yeah, I'm still fine with Jell-O. I'm well, not
he,
like
he didn't
pops,
create
whatever.
And cultivate Jell-O.
No. Yeah, but he was their brand.
Now, picture pages and bumblebee pens can fuck right off.
Mm-hmm. I'm never watching the Fat Albert movie ever again. Yeah. My second favorite movie.
You loved so much My Fat Albert.
Hey.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to be going into the break. But, hey, guess what? For our first break song, we're debuting the song Million Lights off of the album of the same name. This is from one of our listeners, an artist, Cypher. He sent this into us, and we are happy to get to sample some of this work. We actually sampled some of his work from his last album, which I believe was his first album, Till Forever Brooklyn, a little while back. And we hope you guys enjoy this as well. If you want to hear more of it, you guys can check him out over on iTunes. Just type in Cypher, which is P-S-Y-F-E-R, or you can go to soundcloud.com, Cypher Music. Check it out, guys.
Gigawatts for a million lights, Times Square, NYC, forget the hype.
This is it, this is it. Ain't no turning back. I rap it all. If I could bring Oye back, I rap it all. If I can inspire the youth, taking a train to Penn Station and two more to NYU. But that's the gift of life and time. It is a kryptonite. Robert Williams, star man. What can I do? But sit around, watch a hook all day. Then what dreams may come at night? I used to smoke blunts all day. Now I just get high off life. And I give my soul through mics. Head bop because my flow is tight. Mama baby boy blessed cause he got it right. Man, no one can tell me shit cause I know I'm nice. But I didn't get the retros that went with my fitted. That went with my fitted. That went with my fitted. They fucking sold out. I couldn't fucking get it. I couldn't fucking get it. I couldn't fucking get it.
And we're back for the news. And first up, the Coen brothers, now that we've already been talking about them because of Fargo so much, they're actually going to step their toes into the TV realm. Did you guys hear about this? So they're going to be doing a Western TV series called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Sounds right.
Sounds all like right. A perfect name for them to be doing something yes. with. And we just got a little bit more details about this. So it's about a singing cowboy.
Perfect.
Sounds right.
Near Algodones is about, I guess this is one of the episodes, is about a high plains drifter who owns fecklessness dogs, whose own fecklessness dogs his attempts at bank robberies and cattle driving. That makes a lot more sense.
It's like, what's a fecklessness dog? Yeah. Can I own one?
So he's not able to rob banks and not able to cattle drive. Okay. There's going to be an episode called Meal Ticket that follows an actor and impresario on a traveling show. There's going to be one called All Gold Canyon about a prospector who happily finds a gold seam, but then unhappily finds an evil encroacher. There's going to be another episode that follows two trail bosses on the Oregon Trail and a woman on the wagon trail who need the help of one of them. And there might be some marriage prospects.
I'm definitely going to watch a couple episodes of this show.
Okay, yeah. I guess it's fully embracing period pieces. We weren't sure where they're going to go.
Did you say it's an anthology? Because those episodes sound really different.
Yeah, now it's sounding like it because I'm not sure.
Are they just following one drifting goober around? Is that
It's about a singing cowboy, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs. So I'm imagining
Western Bard. Yeah, we're just following the Bard around. All right.
Okay. Yeah. I like that.
So this will be
this could be fun.
They did No Country for Old Men. They've done True Grit. I guess True Grit was a little bit more of a period piece.
Yeah. That was a great remake. I really liked it.
Yeah, I really
enjoyed it. No Country was 80s.
but it was still at its core.
Well, and Oh Brother. They've definitely set stuff in the past before.
So are they writing and directing this? Do we know? Or are they just producing?
It sounds like they're at least having a heavy hand in the writing. Yeah, I think they're doing both.
Okay.
Those guys, I think they like to control all aspects now.
I really hope so. I mean, if it's literally just going to be like Coen Brothers produced, then it's going to come off feeling like you got a computer to generate a Coen Brothers plot. If they walk away from it, I think it would go downhill. Like I'm really hoping that they have some significant involvement.
It does say they're going to be writing and directing here.
Okay,
so that's good. You know what else to be excited about, Mike? No. I believe you were saying already you can't wait for the Jetsons. Becoming as a live action show to TV, and get this, Robert Zemeckis is apparently executive producing.
Well, he did do Back to the Future Part 2.
And he did The Frighteners.
All right,
which is awesome.
Actually, yeah, that's a great movie,
right?
Isn't
it really good? Surprisingly good. Not a whole lot is known. This might just be one of those that gets in development and falls through. Sounds kind of goofy, but
I think this kind of comes around like every decade. Doesn't it?
Peter Jackson directed.
Oh, Peter. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I think he produced it. Anyway, Peter Jackson directed it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Zemeckis, I mean, as long as this thing doesn't come off looking like Polar Express.
Yeah, I don't want the George Jetson dead eyes.
Yeah. He hasn't directed television since making 3 episodes of Tales of the Crypt in the 90s, is what this article says.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. All right.
So there's some news from Hawaii 5-0. That Daniel Day-Kim and Grace Park are no longer going to be part of the 8th season, which begs the question.
How are there 8 seasons of this show?
Are they counting the original 60s show in that 8 season run?
I didn't know this was going on.
No, I mean, this makes sense, though. Like, I I remember it premiering, and that was a long time. God.
I mean, every time I go to my grandma's house, it's on. So I guess that makes sense.
Is Scott Kahn still on this?
Yeah. Well, part of the reason they're leaving.
Daniel Scott Kahn?
And Grace Park. Well, because there was
he's such a douchebag.
Just Scott Kahn personally.
Just him.
His body odor.
There was a contract dispute, and they wanted equal pay because they are some of the main actors on the show. And
yeah.
They haven't gotten it.
Oh, wow.
So finally they had to part ways. And
oh, I got to imagine a big part of the audience is watching this show because of these two people. They bring in so many fans.
The cred from Lost, the cred from Battlestar.
Yeah. After 8 years, you're the leads. I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah. And Daniel Day-Kim ended up saying, basically he was talking about, you know, how important this role was to him. He really appreciated getting to have a three-dimensional character like Chin-Ho, who I didn't know that was the name of the character, I guess. But he says the path to equality is rarely easy. So
got to quit a show that you don't mind doing because it's not... Wow.
They won't.
Good on Daniel Day-Kim.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's moving back to the mainland. He's been in Hawaii forever, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Bad on CBS, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally... Mike, you just pulled up this story, and this is too good for us to not talk about.
I apologize.
Sons of Anarchy, their spinoff has an update. So they're doing the show, Mayans MC. It's about the Mayans motorcycle crew that were
because
not,
no one asked for it.
No one was. They weren't ever that interesting on the show anyway, but Kurt Sutter just wants to keep with this world because it did gangbusters for him and FX. They are reshooting the pilot and recasting. So
yeah, it's not clear what roles are recasting, but the rumor is it's going to be major parts. So
wow.
I think Edward James Olmos is still going to be in it, at least in the pilot.
Oh, man. So I mean, I feel bad for him. Good? He should leave.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is obviously a sinking ship at this point.
Yeah.
That just sounds horrible. I mean, there's times where you hear news come out of TV shows and you think, you know, literally all news after Brian Fuller's exit from Star Trek Discovery, where you just nod and go, sure, maybe they're telling the truth. This will be fine. But recasting and reshooting your pilot at this point, there's an off chance you're going to like suddenly get this Rubik's Cube right and make a great show in the last 15 minutes of your time making it. But didn't they completely reconfigure Suddenly Susan? I mean, like the track record of shows where they fired the whole cast, redone the pilot is not great.
No.
Game of Thrones didn't fire their cast, but they had to reshoot a lot of that pilot.
But a lot of
pilot was real bad.
A lot of that was tone, you know, a lot of that was getting the tone right. And they really rushed that pilot too.
Yeah.
I think there's
even at $10 million or whatever they poured into the pilot.
What is wrong with this show? I'm dying to know what's wrong with this show.
Yeah, there's like other things wrong with this show, not just Tony.
God, let that pilot.
It's gotta be Kurt Sutter. He's bonkers.
So does the shit pilot exist? Like, is this on? Yeah. I wonder if this is on the webs.
Oh, someone leak it so we can
God,
see it.
Please, someone. I want to see this.
It's just somebody fucking somebody else in the ass for 2 hours.
These are the people that saw the Sons of Anarchy finale and went, that's awesome. So I'm dying to know what was too cheeseball.
Oh, and he puts his arms out like that.
Oh God,
the like Jesus pose.
And the show just ends on like a lingering shot of bread and a crow, like in the fucking road. I'm like,
God, was it like Mr. like Kiri? Something terrible, awful. What? All right, and before we go into the break, I just also wanted to mention that the second break song also comes from Cypher's second album, Million Lights. The track is called Pasadena. Enjoy.
Whipping life is pain, riding with Pasadena, putting bros to shame, riding with Pasadena, rolling that John flame, lighted my Pasadena, that yippee-ki-yay, that's my Pasadena, she down with OPG. Riding with Pasadena, she throws it down on me. Riding my Pasadena, don't hide it, my Pasadena. Go crazy, my Pasadena. I slay it, my Pasadena. Relay it, my Pasadena. Look for the hope inside. Let love be your guide. I know you wanna confide. He keeps playing, you keep snatching. You know something ain't right. You know the hoes that he likes. You see them all on Twitter. Hashtag you just cause they bitter. You keep posting regrets, just out of disrespect.
I know you know what comes next. You hit me up and I know what's up. You get in your truck and just check. Drop off a hook and then bounce. My studio Malibu house. My game is running a mouth.
So we're going to be talking about Wrecked first, and then we're going to talk about American Gods. And Wrecked is this comedy on TBS.
I found this by complete accident. I don't have cable. I don't watch TBS. I got an opportunity to interview Brian Sacca, who is one of the two leads, and was lucky enough to get some screeners for it, and ended up kind of binge-watching most of season one. With my wife the entire time looking over at me going, I love this show. I kind of really love this show. And after like the third episode, I was like, honey, we should probably stop being defensive about this and just go like it's probably all right that it's an okay show. We don't need to talk about it like it's an ugly stepchild that happens to be weirdly funny. I'm amazed.
It is peculiar, though.
It is a different show than I expected. All right. It's a Lost send up.
Yeah. It's a
what?
It seems like it's a Lost spoof.
Yes.
Oh. And yet... It carves its own path, and it does it really well.
Because basically the entire premise is that you don't land on an island with doctors and people who respond well to emergencies. That, like, the 12 people that survive your plane crash are assholes and just selfish, stupid assholes. Like, I think one guy gets stranded for, like, a day separate from everyone else and eats part of a person.
He resorts to cannibalism.
Like, resorts to cannibalism in, like, a day.
Yeah.
And then has to deal with it for the rest of the... Like, one guy just snaps and doesn't want to leave the island because his life back home is shit.
I love the reveal of the of Turdhole.
Yes.
Oh, he's a Nazi.
Yes.
So it's okay that I killed him.
Like, no.
You can't just posthumously call yourself a hero.
Like, Turtle from Entourage?
Turdhole.
Oh,
that's his last name.
Yeah, they find somebody's luggage tag and they're like, "Whose name's Turdhole?" and somebody finally owns up to it. Like, I tell people it's Turdole, but it's Turdhole.
It's Turdhole.
But yeah, he ends up getting shot and killed in season one, and then it turns out he's a Nazi. So the person that shot him is like, "See, not a murderer, Nazi hunter." Like, I'm like a war hero. Like, you are definitely not a war hero.
It's Rhys Darby.
It's Rhys Darby from Flight of the Conchords is who shoots Turtle.
You know, I was watching this. I watched like halfway through the first season, and I was thinking to myself, man, they're not doing a lot with Rhys Darby. And then all of a sudden, right as soon as I thought that, they switch and he takes over.
Literally takes the island over. Yeah.
It's so fantastic.
Yeah, it's weird. In season one, there are a couple of episodes where in trying to establish the ensemble cast, they kind of have to drop a couple of people from week to week. There was a moment where I wondered if Krieger, the other lead,
Owen?
Yeah, Owen.
Zach Krieger, yeah.
Who I knew from Whitest Kids You Know. But there were a couple episodes where he just wasn't really present, and I had a moment of like, oh, please don't be writing people off this show. Because everybody's just great on it.
Yeah, they all drop off and then they show back up. Like George Basil, I'm not sure how to say his last name, who plays Chet, the dirty hippie guy. Like, he's also over on Crashing on HBO.
Yes.
He's been popping up in a couple different things. I'm like, oh, wow, he's got a lot of time, I guess.
Everybody does their niche character really well. Like, everybody has a good role in the island. And the show kind of continually, through their idiocy, takes the plot in places I didn't expect. I feel like one of the problems with island shows is literally you can't add cast.
Yeah.
Or change cast. You're going to have your ensemble, but who else do they interact
with?
It's
just got to dwindle down eventually. Or, yeah, go like the Lost route and have other people crashing in. Or,
like, oh, hey, there was another tail of the plane the whole time we didn't know.
Yeah.
So the way Wrecked did it is at the end of season one, they have a boat show up to rescue them, which is a whole argument of who wants to leave the island. The boat's pirates. And so the arrival of the pirates in season two has been spectacular. And it, within an episode, it establishes, like, it completely changes the dynamic. Like, the pirates come in and integrate into the show so that the pirates aren't leaving anytime soon.
It was just brilliant, the introduction. I love Ravi Patel, who plays Tank Top.
Yes. Yeah, the main pirate, Barracuda, her guys are just idiots, and she doesn't learn their names. So it's like Capri Pants and Tank Top.
Tank Top, Ravi Patel, you'd recognize him as the meathead friend of Aziz Ansari in Master of None.
That's why I know
who's
him,
who's like
yes.
always trying to sell his other business on the side.
Oh, yeah.
It's great addition to this show as well.
Is the tone of this more bajillion dollar properties where it's like just a setting for a bunch of great sketches, or is it more like Scrubs?
It's more like Scrubs.
Okay.
There's definitely, from what Brian Sacker was saying in the interview that's up, there's a lot of improv. Like, they walk into every scene with the lines, and then what can you do?
Okay.
But it is a scripted show. Like, whereas Bajillion feels like they have a framework.
Yeah.
And they just shoot a lot of crap, and then they cut together their narrative.
Right.
This is definitely a scripted sitcom.
As a huge Lost fan, I thought I could go one of two ways here. Either like, oh, wow, I love this. Or I could be like, I don't appreciate you guys just making fun of Lost.
I was really wondering if Grant was going to find this funny or not.
But like, how it takes and borrows certain plot points and does its own thing. You have like the annoying guy who gets killed that no one likes, who's like Arch. You have the Kreger guy, Owen, who has to leave and wants to chart the rest of the island like Saeed does. Mm-hmm. You have hints to bigger mysteries that they're obviously doing wink and nods to.
Yep.
The idea of Lost in these mysteries, but they never actually stray into the paranormal or the sci-fi realm. And I really appreciate that, even though they seem to want to occasionally.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of waiting for them to have a polar bear show up or something, but they've not leaned into that like that.
Instead, it's an adorable little pig with a guy when he falls in, he gets trapped in the pit.
The actress or the cast member that has absolutely shocked me is the woman that plays Karen, I think, that hunts all their food.
Yeah.
I looked
the lock.
Yeah, she's basically their lock.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's totally their John Locke. And she's really not done a lot of other work, but she owns this character.
She's so intense.
Yes, she walks this absolutely hysterical intensity line of crazy but helpful. And she just keeps wandering back out of the forest or the jungle with like a whole dead boar. And like, how did you do that? Like, don't ask Karen questions.
Yeah, just a wilderness expert.
And she's like, happy to do it.
Yeah. Some of the plot lines in like the third or fourth episode, they did one where they find a DVD player. And then they're like, oh, there's enough time on this, enough battery life that we can watch one movie. And we have Dumb and Dumber 2 or Selma. And suddenly they go through a racist crisis.
Yes. Like, it's the whole episode.
Selma, what are we?
I think it's finally, it's not until like one of the black castaways is like, I don't want to watch Selma.
They're like, oh, sweet. All of us can watch Dumb and Dumber 2.
Because every single person's like, I want an escape. I don't want to watch a bummer movie. Like, I want an escape movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but none of them, but every one of them like, no, you're right. We should watch Selma.
This whole thing is just cracking me up. I love it. The second season just picked up. It started like, it's three episodes in.
Yes.
Right now. And the pirate plot line, the love stories going on with like Steve. It's great stuff. You guys need to check this out.
Yeah, it's on the...
How do I watch this?
The TBS app.
All right.
If you don't have cable... Now, I believe the newest episodes, you have to tie into your cable subscription because TBS's app is...
I think they put the first few up, though, for free?
Yeah, the whole first season's up.
Mm.
And I believe the first episode of season 2 is up. So they're delaying them, it seems like.
I'm kind of impressed with TBS, what they're doing with comedy lately. Like, they have Angie Tribeca.
Yes.
Which is like a fantastic lampoon... So they have
Search Party,
which I love.
I really didn't realize Search Party was on TBS, honestly.
Yeah, and this, and they're doing some really good things over there.
I wish their app would step it up a little bit. There's a lot of commercials, and it doesn't hang together quite as well as some of the other, like Hulu or Amazon's app.
I feel like if I'm logging in through a paid cable provider, do I also have to watch commercials? That's messed up. But
yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. They need to pay for this stuff.
I wish they'd just do what CW did. I really like the CW app.
What do they do?
You don't need to log in for anything. It's completely standalone. There are commercials, but not as many.
Oh, okay.
I mean, at least it's not seven in a block.
That would be nice. All right, so American Gods, making a transition over here. Let's go ahead and jump over to... let's hold off on the question for a minute.
All right, yeah, we do have Ashley's question.
We have Ashley's question, but addressing the bigger picture before we kind of drill down into the characters here. So, Brian Fuller... It's only eight episodes.
Is it 10? Is it?
I think it's eight. It's only eight episodes. And this show starts off so fucking weird. What do you make of this? What do you think?
Okay. I read the book. Mm-hmm. I have a really hard time, like, after the first couple of weeks when all I kept hearing back was how confusing and weird this show was, and I'm thinking, man, we all made it through Westworld. How fucking weird can this really – is this really that weird? But I've read this thing, and so you – I knew the premise from the start. Like, I knew that these are aspects of gods brought over by immigrants, so the belief system was weaker, and so they're not
as powerful.
Yeah, so like this is – if there's a Zeus
they're
here –
they're not all Jesus.
Yeah, like if there's a Zeus here, he may not be like Zeus that did everything you ever read about, but he is Zeus. He's just weak. And so you meet gods that live in shithole apartments because there's like one great grandmother still believes in them somewhere. or hardly anyone really does. And they're just a story people half remember, but they just won't totally fade. Like that's basically Vulcan, the gun god. And then you've got new gods like technology and media who have risen up. But again, these other gods haven't gone away.
What's fascinating for me is trying to figure out the extent of people's power and what truly, like, some of them represent.
Yeah.
Like, Mad Sweeney, he is part of one Irish folklore, but he's also representative of leprechauns to some degree. He seems to be, like, a bit of a conglomeration of some things.
Yeah. He's supposed to just be a straight-up leprechaun, but, yeah, they're pulling a little deeper from... I think they're kind of taking some of these things as amalgams, like what we've heard of as leprechauns that are on a Lucky Charms box now is maybe two or three things.
Yeah.
That got composited over history.
But he also is a little bit of the folklore of Mad Sweeney, who's...
Yeah, that's a little strange to
me. Which, like, I was trying to find the parallels there. Mad Sweeney is this idea of this guy who was a king and was in a battle, and he was fighting against... He defied, I think, some sort of, like, priest or something, and he got cursed. And his curse caused him to lose the will to fight and run away and go crazy. And basically suffered for years, I think 7 years, before he got stabbed to death. The whole thing is, like... And, like, they leave milk sacrifices out to him,
I guess. And they do all that in the show. Yeah.
But I don't understand, like, the meaning of
it. I can't remember from the book how that dovetails, because he's, I mean, it's his name in the book as well. And getting to Ashley's question as to whether Mad Sweeney should have been left as a more side character, same with Laura Moon. She is a more side character. I don't feel like they have promoted them really that much above their station in the show.
I actually loved them in this show.
Yeah.
We have a leprechaun hanging out with a zombie and a djinn slash a dude who banged a djinn. I'm not sure.
Like, I don't know what's happened to that guy at this point. Something's up with him. But yeah, I love Mad Sweeney. Pablo Shriver is killing it as Mad Sweeney. One of the first things I heard about this show was an offhand remark that if anybody was going to get a spinoff, it'd be Mad Sweeney. That his character from the early dailies and stuff, or the early footage that was coming out, was that he was just killing every scene he was in. And I love him. Him losing his luck, watching him have the shittiest luck but live through it.
Yeah.
Like all the car wrecks, where you can just see him realize, like, oh, crap. And then everything goes wrong. Yeah. I loved it. And Dead Wife, like him just being shitty to Laura the whole time.
But the big reveal... Like when the ice cream truck crashes, and I was like, oh, I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed their story, and Laura has a significant role in this story. She is the wild card that should not be there. Like,
is she not in the book?
No, she's in the book.
Okay,
but of all the gods' plans and everything, like, I mean, they're obviously. Ian McShane's Wednesday, like, obviously he has a plan. He's gathering people. Obviously, Chris McGlover's Mr. World has a plan and is amassing people. The one thing that nobody expected to do was Shadow to take the wrong coin off Mad Sweeney, which Mad Sweeney never intended to give away. And then past that, nobody expected him to then give it away.
Yeah.
Because he casually flips it onto her grave and it burns its way through, and that's what brings her back to life. So she shouldn't be walking around obsessed with him. And she even makes reference to it in the show where somebody says, you know, are you in love with him? I am now. Like, I think even she realizes that she might not have been in love with him alive, but she is now. She is literally up and walking around for him.
And, like, I don't, having not read the book, I don't know what Shadow Moon is or how big a role his part is. Like, I thought there was going to be some more significance to him already revealed by this point. But now, it like, where it kind of ended with the last episode, it seemed like his significance was to be a person who not only could potentially be a believer in Mr. Wednesday, but to also be a person who would be driven by the motivations of rage and anger and fighting and desperation that would be the proper channel to pay tribute to Mr. Wednesday, I guess, and continue to charge him up, even if he had one believer.
The pay tribute to is interesting. So this book exists. Like, I don't particularly feel bad spoiling the end of this. Shadow is like...
Is this a spoiler for everyone?
It would be.
Okay, jump ahead, guys, if you don't want this spoiled, but I do.
Yeah. You should go out and read the book. It's really fun. That said, this book wraps up with a reveal that even when I was reading it, it made you go, holy crap, how did I not see that coming?
Feeling like it's floating right on the periphery.
It's one of those, like, from the beginning, when he says... he's revealed his actual name, I think, in the season finale now that he's Odin. That Ian McShane, like when he does the I am Grimthor,
Odin. Yeah.
Wait, you read the book and you didn't know that?
No. So you get that through the whole thing, but like that there's people that act like they don't know who Wednesday is, and he tries to
that wasn't a surprise to me.
Yeah, and so the deeper stories of Odin and the sacrificing himself or how he has to die in the Odin sleep and the like. That's why he has one eye. Like there's death and rebirth story to Odin long before Christ. And at the very start of the series, they've already got Shadow hanging. Like they have him lynched from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a premonition of the only why he's there.
Is a sacrificial
like
lamb?
Holy shit, this is a giant Christ story, or Christ is a giant Odin story. But yeah, Odin, like Wednesday is carrying him along and is going to sacrifice him at the end. And he is going to be literally tribute. And the wild card in the scenario is that Laura's watching his back in a way that nobody should be.
And not only that, but she's unkillable. She's got super strength.
Yeah, she's fucking unkillable.
She's already dead. Yeah.
So she is just this unplanned thing. So the gods may have this plan to sacrifice him or to use him as a pawn in this war as this tribute for strength and everything, but... He's kind of got this ace in the hole he doesn't even really understand.
The cast of characters that they bring in for all the different gods and demigods, and even just like rounding out the cast, like Melissa Leo's in here for a bit. I'm not sure if she's supposed to be someone later down the line, but she was just a bartender for like an episode.
And there's an insane amount of gods that are named in the book that don't come, like Mr. Nancy or Orlando Jones' character.
Yeah.
I mean, he's in the book, but and there's another Neil Gaiman book, A Nancy Boys, about his sons. But it's interesting. I'm kind of interested to see who they cast and spend time on, because there's 50 or 70 different gods that are mentioned in the book that are described for a second, when they all have a gathering or something. And I'm kind of interested to see who they'll spend time.
I think that just like 8 episodes felt weird to me.
I did not realize it was the season finale.
Yeah, as soon as this ended, and for as much as I really enjoyed the show, I did not like that season finale. Tonally, it went weird.
It didn't feel like a season finale. I mean, it really didn't. I got done watching it, and then I saw something online about that that season finale, and I went back and like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was it was kind of hokey, right?
Yeah, I loved the show, and they really did put whole chunks of the novel straight up on screen. The bank robbery, there's just some wonderful stuff that made it right up on screen in a way that I bravo to Brian Fuller.
Bravo to him for also bringing back what's her name to be Easter.
Yes, Kristen Chenoweth.
She's really good.
Yeah, Ostara, and she's a little. I feel like she's bigger than she was in the book, but. And all the Jesuses was hysterical, but
and
it was
I love
weird.
Jeremy Davies so much.
Yes, I had to look up that was him.
That's great casting.
He's the Jesus of Nazareth. Yeah,
so perfect.
But that said, I don't. I brought up Westworld earlier because it was the other show that I endlessly heard, oh my God, this is confusing, complaining about from people. Where I went, just
go
be
for the
quiet
ride
and fucking watch it.
Yeah.
But I felt like with Westworld that we were moving forward in the puzzle every week. Mm-hmm. I really felt like I was getting new information each time I got to watch Westworld.
This felt like a mid-season finale.
Yes. This, like, American Gods felt like I was hanging out in that world for a while and I loved it, but it didn't feel like I was driving towards anything. I don't really know where the road at this point. I only know because I read the book. If you're just watching the show, this isn't a road trip towards a goal. This is just an aimless road trip. Well, I mean, you know you're heading somewhere, but or rather, you know that Wednesday is heading somewhere, but we don't really know why or what he's doing.
Bringing Shadow Moon to a point where he goes from being an atheist to a believer in something,
yeah,
I suppose was part of the point, but I did not like the execution of when he delivers his final revelation, I guess, as a character. And that mixed with the battle with media and TV boy, mm-hmm, or internet boy, I guess.
Yeah.
Technology boy. And Mr. World. Like, they came out as like some 80s goons kind of like snapping their fingers or something. It seems silly,
yeah,
when like they're like, hey, we're going to fight you. And then they're like, oh yeah, we're going to show off some lightning powers and some springtime blight.
Yeah. I did like her doing something that she just can't take back. Like, but the fight was, overall, the tone was problematic. I didn't like parts of the fight, but then I did like the look on Media's face when she realized, like, what did you just do? Because she killed, like, probably a tri-state area worth of farmland.
Yeah.
And in a like, no, everybody is going to figure out to worship me or starve. And I was like, all right, balls out. That's you just threw that gauntlet down. It's on now.
It's a pretty good move.
But like you said, the execution of it left something to be desired in the scene.
I think my problems were more like musical cues, like weird things like that, the editing. Like, the story, I think, was there, but however they finally executed it, all of it just felt a little off, especially for this to be a big build-up climax for the season and a payoff to what they were trying to do for story arcs for Wednesday and more importantly, Shadow Moon.
It's a good sign for the show that I wanted more show.
Absolutely. I'm super eager.
But I really needed two more episodes in this season. And I realize that I say exactly the opposite of that for almost every other show.
Yeah.
But I really wanted another episode or two.
We get two little scenes with Mr. Nancy.
Yeah.
And
I wanted a little more with what they're doing with, I mean, they could have brought Chernabog along a little further or more with Mr. Nancy, or hell, I'd have taken more Mad Sweeney.
But getting these Neil Gaiman vignettes where they look at the historical, or I guess the origins of these fairy tales, these myths, yeah, and these gods. The story where, what's her name? Browning, the dead wife, zombie lady.
Yeah.
Where she also plays the Irish woman.
Yes, the Mad Sweeney story.
That was really good.
Yeah. And it took me a second to realize that they had literally cast the same actress.
Me too. Laura. I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Which I thought was a little strange. But yeah, I've liked some of the back. I've liked the backstory. I've liked the asides. To me, it meant that you had another couple episodes of Modern Time that you could have told me about.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'll be back next season regardless. They've got my number. I mean, it's not like I'm not watching this show.
Exactly. This is really good. I can't wait to see more.
It looks freaking gorgeous. I have a crush on Kristen Chenoweth, so watching her blight a three-state area so that she can glow is just great.
More of her. These are people that we get to see already work, mm-hmm, in the Brian Fuller world, so I'm just waiting for Lee Pace to show up, Chuck to show up.
Yeah. I'd take Chi McBride or Lee Pace or, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be so good.
Mads Mikkelsen.
Please? Mm-hmm. All right, guys. We are going to wrap it up there. Mike, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for spoiling American Gods for me.
Oh, shit.
No problem.
No, you know, it's fine because I kind of needed somebody to kind of sell me on it. And even though you spoiled a few things, I am directly going to go back to my Amazon Prime app, fire up Stars, and watch it.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean, I will say, if nothing else, it is it is definitely in the tier of shows like Hannibal or Westworld, where you every once in a while just sit back and go, damn, this is what TV should look like.
Nice.
Just got to absorb it.
Yeah, jaw-droppingly
beautiful. I can understand how it's heavy for some people or it's a little off-putting. It's weird.
It is weird, and the violence is weird.
Yeah.
But it is one of the shows most often recently that I have just paused and gone, God, that's a beautiful shot.
Exactly.
I do like weird violence.
All right, Les, thank you for joining me. And once again, we wanted to thank Cypher for lending his tracks for this week's break music. And we featured Pasadena and Million Lights off of the album Million Lights.
Nice.
And you can hear more by going to soundcloud.com/cyphermusic. That's P-S-Y-F-E-R music. Or once again, go to iTunes and go ahead and look that up as well. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.